Good morning. I have just a couple announcements to make. One, I'd like to welcome everyone who's joining us online this morning. Let me turn this mic on. Is that a little bit better? Okay. I'd like to welcome those who are joining us this morning. I know Joe and some of the people at that nursing home are watching. Also, Golden Living. We want to welcome you and some of the others that are joining us. And if you are in the area and watching this, try to stop by sometime. We'd like to meet you in person. And I have a lesson that I want to cover this morning that's been on my heart for quite a bit. This month, the United States Supreme Court will be issuing an important decision concerning DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. And at stake is the imposition of forced acceptance of national gay marriage upon every state of the union. You'll be hearing about that. And if they say they strike DOMA down, it'll make legal in every state of the union. They're going to force people to have gay marriage. And they've seen that coming for quite some time. Now, perhaps they'll just kick it down to a lower court. And, you know, then they'll just have the decision stick for that state. They might even strike it down altogether. That would be good, but it's only a temporary measure. It'll be back. In any case, our nation will soon find out and likely be forced to live with the consequences of having to deal with something that is eroding the Christian roots of our country. This morning's sermon I'm titling, Holy Matrimony or Government-Sanctioned Marriage. The covenant of marriage in America has been under serious assault for the last 50 years. And as we push God out of the culture, so goes the marriage. There was a simpler time in our history when marriage more resembled the biblical point of view, which is favored by God. Those who originally fled the oppressive kingdoms of Europe and came to America rejected the requirement of having these religious theocratic ceremonial rules. It was instituted under Catholicism and spread to the Church of England, and pretty soon they're taking unscriptural positions and just imposing them on all the people and saying, unless if you're married under the king's authority, the way the king says to do it, we're not going to honor your marriage. The government over there was taking an anti-scriptural approach. And this really bothered these people who came here. And as they came here, they wanted to make sure that this would not be imposed on them. Without the other Christian colonists read the Bible, came to the conclusion that marriage was between a man and a woman in the presence of God according to his standards demonstrated in Genesis 2, verse 23 and 24. The man said, now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of the man. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and cleave unto his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. They did not want something as important as marriage dictated by religiously warped governments of the day. They desired to follow what the Bible taught because man messes things up. Their marriages early on more resembled of what we call common law marriage today. They learned this from that above text. And their ceremonies had few guests, didn't have the elaborate rituals that we have today. It was simply one man and one woman agreeing before the eyes of God and a couple witnesses on three basic fundamentals of the marital covenant. And here they are. Number one, a man shall leave his mother and father. They were a family relationship. Those two were the family relationship. Before there were children, in-laws, and other extended members of the family unit, there was just one man and one woman before the eyes of God in that Garden of Eden. They made up the first family. No longer would Adam be a single bachelor, but would join this woman and would be viewed through the eyes of God as a family unit, the bedrock of society. Often in marriage, we foolishly allow others to come between us and our spouse. Sometimes it's the in-laws. In fact, usually it's the in-laws. This tends to be the origin of all the mother-in-law jokes that you hear. For example, one cannibal says to the other, "I can't stand my mother-in-law." And the other one says, "Why don't you just eat the vegetables?" And that's a joke, okay? You're supposed to go, ha, 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 okay? But the in-laws can really meddle in a family. You see, when a father gives his daughter's hand away in marriage, they're starting a new family. And we have to get that through our heads that we don't allow other people to meddle in there. Another one is that's not uncommon is when a spouse will put their children ahead of their marriage. Children are not the family. They're an extension of the family, period. They're expected to grow up and then start their own family, okay? But that's not how we treat it most of the time. We'll allow the kids to pit mom against dad. You know, dad doesn't want something, you know, so they go to mom, okay? And then mom, you know, does it, and that causes friction. You know, maybe the mom is spending too much time with the kids and not enough time with her husband, or the husband, vice versa. That is not the marriage. They're to leave their mother and father, period. They're starting a brand new family relationship. Occasionally, we even allow our friends to interfere in our marriage unit. If you're spending more quality time with your buddies or your girlfriends than you are with your spouse, then you're probably not honoring this part of the covenant. Okay, if they're causing friction with that, if your friends are saying, "Yeah, okay, yeah, why don't you just leave the wife behind and go do this?" If you don't have the wife's permission to go do that, that's really her saying, "You need to spend more time with me." Now, obviously, if your wife never wants you to go, then that could be a problem too. Okay, you need to get something worked out there. But the bottom line is, you can't allow people to interfere in that family relationship. We also tend to allow our career to interfere in our relationship. Countless marriages have ended because one or both of the spouses are spending all their time on the job, and then they have to wear name tags when they come home because they're not spending time with each other. And that's a dangerous precedent to have. Being in a Christian marriage means that you're going to put your spouse in the most unique position in your life. Nobody on earth is higher in a relationship with you before God's eyes than your spouse. And that's part of that marital covenant. It's a tripod. He shall be joined to his wife. They're in a lifelong relationship. A lifelong relationship. The key part of that is joined. When Jesus quoted the same phrase in Matthew chapter 19, verse 6, he used the Greek word that means to join fast together or to glue or cement. It was a common word that carpenters like to use because it referred to taking two pieces of wood and then you glue them together and you make them into one piece of wood. And whether it be a bench or a table, it was put together with the intention for the life of that unit that you made. So like this table up here, this wasn't carved or hewn out of one piece of wood. This wasn't. It functions like one piece of wood because it's been joined together. As Jesus said, we are joined together in a marriage. It's a lifelong relationship. Matrimony is not intended to be a temporary agreement between two people, but lifelong until death do you part. Now, the word divorce should never be part of your vocabulary. If you enter the covenant of marriage, divorce is a bad word. You don't throw it around. You don't use it. We banned it in our home from the very beginning. We don't even allow it. The only time that word comes up is if it comes up and that somebody got a divorce. You know, you have to bring it up that way. But the bottom line is, it's not an option for you if you're Christians, period. You work things out. You have a term and condition of the agreement. It is a lifelong relationship. If you're having money problems, remember that you were married for richer and for poor. If you have illness that's damaging your matrimony, remember that you married for in sickness and in health. If you've been going through some bad times in the marriage, remember you married for good times and for bad times. When Christians marry, they both understand that they're in it for life, for both are under the arrangement of God. Divorce among Christian couples is only available in cases of infidelity. That's why they call it infidelity. It's the act of an infidel. And for even then, there has to be a bold attempt to work this thing out. But that's the only reason that's given. Paul confirms that. Paul, in referring to what Jesus is saying, a Christian wife should not leave her husband, and the husband should not leave his wife. At best, they could separate, but then come back together again. That's it. Because both Christians are under the same covenant. They both sign the same agreement in spirit. And so they have to work these things out. This is why it's important that you marry a Christian. If you're a Christian and you see somebody who's a non-Christian and you bring them home and say, "Woo, I bring her or him home to the parents," you better be rethinking this. "Oh, I'll do a quick conversion." You better be thinking that too. Quick conversion. I've seen people baptized, not into Christ, but baptized into that future spouse. And that mask comes off later on. And you don't have Dr. Jekyll. You have Mr. Hyde. And you better be careful about that. Paul says, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. Together, you both want to be on the same page signing that agreement. Imagine if you went to go buy a car and you had that agreement. That agreement tells what they're bound by. They're going to loan you the money. You're going to have these amount of payments. If you have responsibility, they have responsibility. Imagine if they're able to opt out. They say, well, we're not going to honor our part of the agreement because I don't feel like we're bound. But you are. Yeah, you wanted to sign up for that deal? I'd prefer to be walking. If they could just change their mind, you buy the car, and then they show up the next day, and they say, "Oh, I don't like that. I want to get paid now." And then mess it up. If you're going to be in an agreement, you have to agree with the one you're agreeing with. You have to. Agreement means you're on the same terms and conditions of the offer. The two shall become one flesh. They were to be in a sexual relationship. Paul would later use the phrase in describing immoral sexual liaisons between a man and a prostitute. He says, "Or do you not know," 1 Corinthians 6:16, "that the one who joins himself to a prostitute is one body with her?" And he quotes this, "For the two shall become one flesh." One flesh in it, my friends, is sex. That's what it is. One flesh in it. So if you're looking for something scriptural to drop the hint to your wife, just say, "Hey, babe, I'm in the mood for one flesh in it." She says, "I understandeth thou what thou sayest." But God knows the biological desires of the humankind and the intimacy that most people desire. He didn't tempt us above that we are able, 1 Corinthians 10:13, but he provided a way to escape called marriage. You can have as much as you want in the marital covenant. That's what he designed it for. According to God, this intimacy is sanctified by him. God says, "That's special. That's okay, you can do that. But all those other things, you can't do. That's not special. That's abhorrent to me." 1 Corinthians 7:3, it says, "The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband." If you're entering a marriage agreement, okay, and you didn't know that that included that part, you're in for a big surprise on your honeymoon, folks. Big surprise. The object is, God intended that to be in marriage, not out of marriage. If you're getting married, you should fully expect certain obligations in that. Well, when this part of the relationship is violated, it disrupts the holiness of the matrimony. That agreement with feelings of betrayal and pain. Christian couple must always keep themselves only unto each other as long as they both shall live. Jesus said that this was so serious that he decreed the only permissible reason that you could even consider divorce, as I mentioned earlier, Matthew 19:9, except for immorality. Don't violate it. You're messing up if you are. The sexual relationship of a marriage makes it possible that children may and likely will come. It's a natural blessing of God. He invented biology. We didn't come up with it. God designed it. It's not a fluke of nature. It's how God designed it. After their kind, after their kind, after their kind. Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth. Together, the mother and father will hopefully bring a balance to the children's life through the parenthood. Husbands model the sacrificial love for his wife as Christ laid down his life for the church. She is to model submission to her husband in everything. To his leadership, just like the church submits to Christ as her leader. Ephesians 5:31-33, the verse that Josh read, communicates that very same thing. They model that back and forth, not only for their own children to see, but also for the whole world. Maybe their children will pass that down, and then it's a light unto the dark world that they will be in. Matrimony before the eyes of God is intended to be a family relationship, a lifelong relationship, a sexual relationship, and no other agreement you will ever make on earth will have all three of those components. I guarantee you they won't have it. Only one has all three of those components. It's lifelong. Would you buy a house that the payments never ended? I mean, that I'd suggest you don't do that. Would you buy a car where they had the legal right to one flesh with you? I would suggest you not do that. Okay, the bottom line is these three things are in the marital covenant. This is what the early colonists believed, and they wanted to apply that to their marriage. They made it very clear. We don't want the Church of England saying that this pervert on the throne is going to dictate who could be married and under what terms and conditions. It's God. He invented humans. He made Adam and Eve, and he said this is how it has to be. He outlined everything that marriage stands for. Family relationship, lifelong relationship, a sexual relationship. Well, state marriage laws of the past. Let's talk about those. Well, I want you to see how they've radically changed just in the last 50 years. Our original marriage licenses from the government reflected these principles, which were based in Christianity. Marriage was held high in our culture even as long back as only 50 years ago. And I mean very high standards. Fault divorce, for example. In the last few decades, if you go back before 1969 in our country, there had to be fault established in a marriage. The judge would investigate on if there was some cheating going on. You had to have reasonable cause as to why you're divorcing. You just couldn't show up and say, I don't like this person anymore. No. He'd investigate. If they found someone who was a cheating party, you know what would happen? They would pay dearly. They'd get their spouse would get the house, the children. You know, they punished the guilty party in that case. That's how it was. They based it in the Bible. And, you know, perhaps the wife was no longer willing to have relations. That was also in many of the states because it was built into the marital covenant. If there was a wife who said, no, I have a permanent headache, that was reasonable cause for divorce because they married with the intention of having that and now they're taking it away. It had to be in there. Another rule they had in a lot of states, if the husband was convicted of a felony and would spend his life in prison, well, he can't fulfill his duties anymore. And they viewed that oftentimes as a violation of that covenant. But bottom line is, if there was somebody who messed up, they paid up in the end. Pro-marriage protections were put into our laws. Most states had laws on the books against philandry. It was seriously bad. They made it a crime even to proposition a woman, and the result was a jail and fine. I want to read to you a document that I have here. I was doing a little research for my mom. I was collecting all these. I was going to surprise her with all these newspaper clippings of how she grew up. I paid up and got the archives and just searched her name everywhere she lived and pulled up everything. Well, in Omaha, I came up with a little article right here. I got a copy of the paper right here. In Omaha, Nebraska, in 1963, okay, it says Clarence L. Bigley of Omaha was fined $50 Wednesday for calling the home of Mrs. Gary Hamilton and asking her for a date. Okay? Mrs. Hamilton, 22, that's my mom, agreed to meet Wrigley in a tavern, and she had sheriff's officials who followed her to make that arrest. This guy, there was a law, and it was all over the country. He had laws all over the country. You went to jail if you actually approached a woman and you said, hey, you know, how about we get together? Oh, yeah? That is a crime. That's how serious they were about that. And, you know, you had bigamy laws and polygamy laws. You know, the Mormons tried to force polygamy issue in our country, and the Supreme Court made a decision in 1892 that said you can't have that. You know, it's very clear we're one man, one woman. They based it in the Bible and cited 87 historical precedents to back it up, that you can't keep God out of the culture. I mean, they have all kinds of rules. Just go back and look on how things used to be. And I'm repeating these things. You might say, well, Doug, I heard a while back you had a sermon similar to this. Well, maybe it has some of the similar components, because I'm not going to ban truth once I spoke it. You have an entire nation of young people growing up, and they don't even know what it was like. And unless if you investigated it, you don't know what it's like. And only the very aged in our congregation even have, and sometimes you don't listen to them. Go talk to some of the elderly. When I grew up, you didn't call somebody Chuck and Mary if they were Mr. and Mrs. Jones. You didn't do that. If you're my age, you know you get smacked to the ground. And you know what? You go home and say, Mrs. Anderson, slap me. What'd you do? I called him Wilma and Betty or whatever. Okay? And they get slapped again. So you just kept it to yourself. Where'd you get that mark? I ran into a tree. I was chasing a squirrel. You respected marriage. But today, the marriage certificate, go look at a marriage certificate from the government. You don't see anything about God. You see a number, you see a seal, and that you paid the money, and that's it. It's just a registry. That's all it is. And the laws certainly indicate that as well. No-fault divorce since 1969. Starting with California, women's liberation groups supporting it. All 50 states now have no-fault divorce. Here's how it works. If you want to get out of a marriage, it's no fault. Nobody's at fault. Everything's just 50-50. So if you have a wife who's upholding her end of the marriage, and you have a philandering husband, he can just leave. Nothing binding him. Judge says you only get half. You know, at the most, you split the half of the bills, half of this, half of that. When they used to punish someone who wasn't honoring the commitment of marriage. Sexual immorality. Since there's no personal responsibility and accountability, it's now time for free sex, sex before marriage, adultery, fornication, pornography, open marriage concepts. Then prenuptial agreements. Since marriage is no longer the highest covenant that you could enter into, and you can separate your funds from the actual covenant, which is ridiculous. Okay, you have prenups. They became popular. People having prenuptial agreements basically says this: I will love you for the rest of my life, but just in case I change my mind, I want to keep what I already had. That's not marriage. Your stuff becomes her stuff. Her stuff becomes your stuff. It's most of the first, I notice, but the bottom line is, you know, my place doesn't look like what I used to have. I used to have, you know, a guy's apartment. You know, the stuffed Siamese cats by the fireplace. You know, just whatever you would have. You know, a guy would have gun racks, things like that. But you get married, the wife changes it because you're now sharing a house. Your money is her money. Your home is her home. Your car is her car, and so you buy her a car, so she's just driving yours. Or you get a stick shift. But anyway. But then you have gay marriage. Anyone who reads the Bible knows homosexuality is a sin. It is a sin, just like adultery, fornication, pornography, like those others. God's an equal opportunity condemner of all immorality. And you have to, you don't have to be a Solomon to figure that out. Just read the Bible. It's laws against nature. That's what they used to call sodomy laws in our country. Our laws in this country, even less than two decades ago, held that behavior as a crime against nature. We have godless states throughout the country that revere this perversity. In fact, they celebrate this perversity to the point where they say, this is marriage now. Men with men, women with women might soon become the law by the end of this month that the Supreme Court has its way as an oligarchy, passing an edict down to you and me. They've taken your wedding license and they've reduced the value of it. And then, did you know there are groups? Group marriage. If marriage does not mean something, it means nothing. As we speak, there are groups throughout the country lobbying laws right now, like Mormons, certain groups of Mormons, you have Muslims who are saying, we want plural marriages. We want to have polygamy in this country. Well, why can't you? If the sliding scale has said it here, it doesn't mean that. The same precedent that they used to redefine marriage to not be a man and a woman can now open the door for you to have two women or one woman with two guys or group marriages. There are actually hippie groups out there that want communal group marriage so they can carry on their orgiastic behaviors, because marriage doesn't mean anything anymore. Homosexual groups, there are certain groups like NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Love Association. They want to lower the age of consent down to 8 years old, and many of them believe in plural marriages. Can you imagine some guy married to an 8, 10, and 12-year-old boy? It's coming, my friends, because you redefine marriage. It has no meaning. You're simply a number. That's all it is. Some people are even asking if they could marry their pets. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Where do we go from here? Is there any reason why marriage rate in our country is dropping? Why would you want to have this government sanction chaos in your life? As a minister, I don't and I won't. In fact, from here on out, I refuse to sign the government-sanctioned marriage certificate unless the couple can sign my certificate of holy matrimony. There's nothing redeemable anymore about your wedding license, for it's pretty much useless because it doesn't really stand for anything. So, the only reason they have marriage license today is so that if you sire a child, they can stick you with the bill. That's why they want that paternity established. And you could maybe file taxes a little bit better. But other than that, that's all you get for the deal. That's not a deal. That's not worth $50. I have a free agreement. And here's what it is. Certificate of holy matrimony. Based on the things which we have just said here on the scripture, I have a nice thick paper. It's shiny, so it must be good, right? Okay? This is a certificate of holy matrimony. And if somebody comes to me and says, yeah, I'd like you to marry us, I'm going to say, well, this is what you're going to be signing right here. And unless if you go through the classes to learn this, and sign this, I ain't signing your marriage agreement. I'm not signing your legal cohabitation document that you pay $50 for down at the courthouse. I'm not going to do it. Period. Because if you're not willing to follow this, then I'm not willing to even participate in that. Let me read it to you. Here's what it is. Certificate of holy matrimony. On this date, the blank of blank in the year blank, at this location, we hereby agree to the terms and conditions of holy matrimony as spelled out by the Word of God. Like the very first marriage recorded in Genesis 2:24, we understand this agreement is between one man and one woman. In the eyes of the Creator, together we will form a new family of society with lifelong intentions and monogamy. We agree that the husband is the leader of this family, demonstrating his willingness to die for her through display of his love on a daily basis. We also agree that she will yield to his leadership and give him the love, respect, and honor due a husband, furthering developing him into a better leader. Together we will be a model of Christ and his church for all the world to see. We hereby sign this before the eyes of each other, our minister, and most of all, God. And they sign it. And that one you could actually hang on the wall. In closing, I'm convinced if we hold to God's standard of marriage instead of man's watered down piece of garbage, earthly, worldly standards, we're going to be a greater light to a dark world. And we have to do that. If marriage is the bedrock of society, and it is, then we had better be following the highest standards for such. No matter what the Supreme Court says, bring it on. I don't care what you say. Because I'm not going under your rules. I'm under God. And just like Peter, when he had to face before the Sanhedrin, he said, it is better to obey God than man. Because our standards are higher. If they don't want to follow these standards, go down to your justice of the peace and get your document signed. Don't have a church wedding. Don't pretend God is looking down and says, praise God. Praise us. Oh, this is a wonderful. God doesn't call things that are abhorrent wonderful. He calls wonderful things wonderful. And so, I'm ready for that. So you don't have to worry about it. Your preacher is never, ever going to fall for that garbage, period. And I hope you don't either. I hope you take that stand. And direct all your friends here. If they're looking for a minister, send them here. Because you know what they're going to get? A gospel presentation. And learn about marriage at the same time. If you would like to respond to the invitation this morning, I urge you to come forward while we stand and sing.